love the end of the year. I love looking back over 1 year and looking forward to another. I love making lists and plans and resolutions, and the fact that everyone else is doing that too, and everyone is sharing all of these dreams they have for the new year and all these ways they want to improve their habits and their lives. And I love the fact that we all make these plans knowing that we probably won't follow through on all of the goals that we set for ourselves, but the making of the plans and the goals feels like an end in itself. You know, you're reflecting on what you've been doing for the past year, and you're setting intentions for what you want to continue or change for the new year. It's fun. It's all about the possibilities of what lies ahead. And like a lot of people, I'm currently making plans for what I want to read and how I want to read going into 2026. And a large part of that is looking back on what and how I read in 2025. I would say that I read books a lot, but that doesn't necessarily mean I read a lot of books. So the list of books that I have read in their entirety in 2025 is not very long, but the books that I have read, I've spent a lot of time with. This year, more than ever, I have been taking notes on what I read, and I've been writing up pages and pages of my thoughts on the connections between these books or my analysis of individual books. I've been doing research on what I've been reading, and of course, I've been making videos on here as well, talking through things, you know, putting myself in the position of sitting down and trying to articulate what the book is about and what I think about it emotionally and analytically, and trying to get conversations going with other people about the things I'm reading. And so because of all of this extra writing and reading and talking that I've been doing about the books that I've read this year, I do feel like this is one of the best reading years. This is one of the best reading years I've had, I think, in my whole adult life. Possibly also because this is my first full year since I've been permanently done with university. I wasn't planning on really digging into this and taking this into account in this 2025 reading review, but the reality is that I defended my dissertation in October of last year. And so it's been, 2025 has been the first year, the first like calendar year and academic year that I have ever spent totally outside the academic structure, but also the expectation of returning to the academic structure, because I did spend about 3 years outside of academia between my bachelor's and master's degree, but I knew that I was going to go back to school. That was what I was planning for and saving for and reading in preparation for. And so now that I'm over a year out from finishing my PhD and I have no plans to teach or to do a postdoc or anything like that, this is the first year that I have spent where the reading that I do is just for me, that I can read absolutely anything. And I can do absolutely anything about it. I can write about it or not. I can talk about it or not. I can read something in a shallow, superficial way and then put it down and forget about it, never think about it again. Or I can dig deeper and research. And it's been interesting for me to kind of find out about myself that even when I'm outside of academia, I do want to write and research and have kind of more analytical conversations with people about the things I read. And I do, in fact, still want to read literature of the category and time period that I was focusing on during my PhD. I have removed for myself the pressure around that, but it turns out that I still like it. And that has been really satisfying and really kind of internally validating to find out that that I wasn't just doing it for work. I mean, it is still work. This is work. Substack is work. But it's something that I really opted into. and that I still care about, even when I am technically free from it. And, you know, I've talked a lot before, especially while I was doing my PhD, about how making something you love into your job can really change your relationship with that thing and sometimes change it for the worse. I've experienced that in a few ways. You know, I loved baking at home. Then I became a professional baker and I don't really have a sweet tooth anymore. I don't really eat sweets that often. And I used to, you know, sing with my sister and my cousin. We would sing and play music together just kind of for fun. And then we formed a band and we started, you know, recording and doing gigs and trying to like make it a semi-professionalized thing. And it certainly didn't kill our love for the music or for spending time together making music, but it did change things because it brought in an element of responsibility. And, you know, we're thinking about finances and how to market ourselves and how to get, you know, gigs and how to connect with other people. And of course, a similar thing happened for me with reading. I, my whole life, have loved to read. I loved it so much. I majored in it in undergrad, and then I pursued it at the master's and PhD level. And what ended up happening for me, what happens for a lot of people who pursue English degrees, is that your relationship with reading gets strained a bit because you take the thing that you love and you attach deadlines and responsibilities and grades and career milestones to it. And so for a while, I basically stopped reading for fun entirely. I was reading constantly, but it was only for work. And I almost never just picked up a novel because I wanted to read a book. You know, at the end of my workday, I wanted to not be reading anymore. And it took a bit of effort and a bit of intentional work to regain a reading for fun habit. And luckily, I was able to do that while still finishing through my PhD. And now that I'm on the other side of that, I get to continue that reframing for myself of what it means to read both for work and for fun, because I am now pursuing still reading as a job. I'm making videos, I'm writing essays about the things I read, about the study of literature and all that. But I have figured out what is intellectually and creatively stimulating and what is personally fulfilling and fun for me in this balance. And I have been able to maintain a reading practice in this past year that is both for work and for fun and kind of both feeding into each other rather than one taking away from the other. This has ended up being a lot more like introspective and sentimental than I thought it was going to be, but that's what happens at this time of year. You know, that's what happens when you sit down and you start reflecting and casting forward and articulating to yourself where you've been and where you hope to go, whether you're articulating it in conversation with friends or in a journal or staring down a video camera, yelling into the void. Hello, void. So I guess that's a discussion of how I read during 2025. And to get into what I read in 2025, like I said, it's not a long list. As of now, I'm sitting here, it's December 22nd. I'm still reading a few things. So in the final days of this year, I think that my total novels completed tally might get up to 26. That's it. And I don't have a stack of books to hold up here as a visual aid because a lot of books I read this year as ebooks, a couple I listened to as audiobooks, a few I had as physical copies, but then I gave them away to friends and family as soon as I finished reading them. I'll add a list in the video description of all the books I actually read in their entirety in 2025, but part of what I've been interested in looking back on as I'm reflecting on the past year of reading is not just how many books did I start and finish and read the whole thing, but what were my reading habits more generally, including which were the books that I started and didn't finish? And what does that tell me about how I was reading? This is my stack of books that I read in part, and I wouldn't even call it my DNF stack because I don't feel like I started and abandoned these books or that I stopped reading them because I didn't enjoy them or anything like that. I was kind of taking an approach to reading where just the act of reading was good enough, if that makes sense. One kind of mindset shift that was helpful for me in this past year in thinking about my reading goals and what I wanted to get out of reading was de-emphasizing the idea of completing a book as being the goal of reading, and instead just thinking about the reading itself, experiencing the text in some capacity as the point. I spent time with each of these books in different ways, and so I don't see this as like a failure stack. It just happens to be that these books I didn't finish for a number of reasons. You know, I spent a bit of time in July reading Death in the Afternoon by Ernest Hemingway, and this is a nonfiction book about Spanish bullfighting. I didn't read the whole thing. I didn't feel any need to read the whole thing, but I enjoyed going into this book and getting kind of reacquainted with Hemingway's style of writing. I hadn't read anything by him in a very long time. I found myself amused and enjoying his voice in this book, so I went out and I bought, what was it? The Sun Also Rises. Because I was enjoying Hemingway's voice in this book, I went out and bought The Sun Also Rises, and I read it in full. Not my favorite book that I've read, but I'm glad that I read it. I then gave it to my brother-in-law, and I think he's enjoying reading it as well. And so even though I didn't read this book in full, and I'm not going to put it on my list of books I completed this year, I had a good time interacting with it, and it fed into other reading that I was doing and other ways that I was interacting with literature in this past year. Or these three books. These are four books. There's four books here. These are nonfiction books that I have been kind of reading through every now and then in the past year with no real intention of sitting down and racing through it towards its conclusion, but just kind of enjoying the content of these books. I read the first 90 pages of this biography of Elizabeth Barrett Browning. It's not that I've abandoned it, it's just that I moved on and haven't picked it back up again in a while, but that doesn't mean I won't pick it back up again next time it's late and I can't sleep or I'm bored or something like that. A similar case to this one, I read the first 145 pages of this book about Anne Boleyn that kind of focuses on contextualizing her life at court, and kind of the European political and religious power systems and struggles that surrounded her. It was interesting. It's not that I got sick of it exactly, I just moved on to other things and haven't picked it back up again, but I can jump right back in, and I might. There are two books on this didn't finish stack of books that I stopped reading because I did lose interest, and I'm not sure if I'm going to pick up again. One is this romance novel, Mixed Signals by B.K. Borison, that I started reading it because it has a baker as the female protagonist, and I thought that would be fun, but there was no real obstacle to the relationship that I could see, and I was finding it kind of boring. I was like, you're just two nice, hot people who think each other are nice and hot. Just date. Why am I watching you not date? And then this one might be a little controversial, but I lost interest in Bunny. I finished part one. I stopped reading right at part two, 119 pages in. I don't know why. I really liked it at first, and then I just kind of lost interest, and I keep on looking at it on my shelf and thinking, I probably should finish that, and then not picking it up. I might consider picking this back up and giving it another try, but I'm also okay with the idea that it just didn't work for me. I couldn't find my copy of it when I was preparing to make this video. I don't know where it could have gone, but I did spend some time reading Ulysses this year as well. I read 70 pages of it, and then I decided not to do that anymore. So that's another one. That makes 9 books on the stack of read part of it, but not all, may or may not finish it. Still got something out of the reading experience. Those 9 books, in addition to the 25-ish that I will have read in full. There have been a couple of short stories and poems sprinkled in as well. And then there's a whole other category of things that I read for the first time sometimes, but mostly in review for my deep dive videos here. I've made 3 early modern literature deep dive videos this past year, one about Macbeth, one about The Confident of Pleasure, and one about Shrew Taming Plays, Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew, another anonymous version, and the play The Woman's Prize or The Tamer Tamed. So, you know, that's 4 plays, 5 plays that I read this past year. And then for each one of those 3 videos, I was doing research as well, reading articles and chapters out of academic books and things like that. And that's what I mean when I say I read books a lot, but I don't read a lot of books. You know, I'm constantly reading or I'm constantly working with a book in some capacity. And I still don't have a long list to show for it at the end of the year. And that's a completely neutral thing. You know, I think that we each get to individually define for ourselves what constitutes an ambitious or a fulfilling reading goal. I do enjoy making my lists and stacks of books because it's just fun. But personally, I'm not like assessing the success of my past year of reading on the basis of a number of books I've read. No problem for people who are. Like, set those lofty goals, read that number of books, do what you want to do. For me, that's not how I'm measuring a year well spent in books. Really, I'm not measuring at all. I'm just going on feel. And looking back over the past year, I feel good. I like it. And then looking forward to the year ahead, I am setting goals. I've made a list of 4 reading goals that I have, but they're not related to a number of books that I want to read. Instead of setting a numeric goal, I'm kind of just trying to set a vibe. And I've given myself 3 keywords to describe that vibe. My keywords for my 2026 reading vibe are intentional, consistent, and slow. I want to be thoughtful about what I'm reading and why, even if what I'm reading is a series of 8 historical romance novels in the span of 3 days, and the reason why I'm reading it is because, fuck it, I want to. I want my reading for the year to be fairly consistent overall. You know, of course, there are natural peaks and valleys in the amount of reading you do from 1 month to the next. 1 month, maybe I am spending more time than usual visiting friends or working on some other projects, and I don't have as much time to devote to reading. Whereas in another one, I read 8 historical romance novels in the span of 3 days or whatever. But I don't want there to be any months where I don't read because I've burnt out from reading, or where I have things that I'm hoping to get to that I just can't. I want there to be some degree of consistency across the whole year. And I want to overall embrace a slower pace. As I've been talking about in this video, I really like the way I was reading in this past year, and my mode of reading was really one of spending time with books rather than reading through it quickly, closing it, moving on to the next one. And I want to kind of foster that even more in the new year. And so with these 4 different reading resolutions that I have set for myself going into the new year, my hope is that I've given myself kind of 4 different ways that I can implement this overarching goal of reading consistently, intentionally, and slowly. My first reading resolution is a largely practical one, which is no buying new books until I've read through my existing physical TBR, which is right here. I have 19 books that I purchased this past year and haven't read. And I need to, okay, maybe I don't need to read every single one of them. I think I need to read like at least 10 of these books before I'm allowed to buy more. I think that's reasonable. I don't like buying books just to buy them, and I really don't like the idea of having shelves full of books in my house that I don't have a relationship with, whether because I've never read them or because I read it and didn't like it and never plan to read it again. That's part of why I often give books away after I've read them, if I know somebody who I think might like it, or just I know that I'm never going to read it again. There's no sense of me hanging on to it just to populate a bookshelf. So I'd rather send it back out into circulation where somebody actually will read it. So for each of these 19 books, you know, I purchased them because they stood out to me in one way or another. They caught my interest. And so I would like to revisit them and see if while reading them, they continue to hold my interest, or whether I read it and decide that I don't want to continue with it, or that I've read it in full and want to pass it on to someone else, but I don't want them just sitting on my shelf taking up space because they're objects that I purchased. Most of these actually I bought in February and March of this past year. Like if you go to my London bookshop haul video from March, the list of books that I bought then is basically the list of books that are on this stack now. Not entirely. I read some of those books and I have bought a few new books since then as well. But I basically got very enthusiastic at the beginning of 2025 and I was on a birthday trip and I bought a lot of books and I don't regret it. But I do want to work through this stack before I make any more book purchases. Physical book purchases. I think I might allow myself one or two audiobooks. And I'm allowed to buy books for other people as Christmas presents. I'm coping. But no new physical books for me until I've read at least 10 out of 19. That's my first resolution. My second resolution relates to this personal curriculum I've been doing for the past 4 months in Gothic literature. And the resolution is basically to continue my reading of Gothic novels and kind of to finish the curriculum at a more relaxed pace in the first couple months of the new year, because I am not going to get through every novel that I assigned myself, but the beauty of the personal curriculum is that there's no consequences for failing, not even failing to meet my goal, but for working at a different pace than I had originally outlined for myself. And the deadlines that I set are flexible and I can decide to give myself an extension if I want to. And so I am. I have read most of the texts I assigned myself for this curriculum. I read all of my September texts, all of my October texts, most of my November texts. And now in December, I've been really slowing down a lot in reading through the things that I had assigned for myself. And I am going to consider the Gothic literature personal curriculum to be at its official end at the end of December, but I have these books left on my list, and a couple of them I actually purchased, and they're not even on this stack, that I wanted to read that are contemporary Gothic novels. A lot of them are contemporary Gothic romance, and I was feeling kind of sad that I was not going to end up reading them, and then I realized that that was silly. And really, it's a sign of the fact that my personal curriculum has been really, you know, productive and valuable and enjoyable for me, because these are books now that I want to read. And this subject of the Gothic is something that I want to continue to explore. And so I'm just going to carry those contemporary romance novels over to my plans for my 2026 reading and continue engaging with the idea of the Gothic, but in a more relaxed way. I am, once I reach the end of December and the end of this Gothic lit personal curriculum window, going to work up all my notes into a nice long video. I have about 50 pages of notes, single spaced, from the past 4 months of reading. So it's going to take a little bit of work to organize those and translate them into a cohesive video. But once I've been able to do that, I'll talk in more detail about what I've read and what I've learned and what I didn't get to read and how that figures into my future reading plans. But for now, as I'm making my New Year's resolution, this second resolution is just to basically not let the end of the personal curriculum project be the end of my interest in the Gothic and to make sure that I keep fostering that and pursuing books that engage these subjects and these themes as I continue reading, because I've really enjoyed it and I want to keep on tracking some of these ideas and themes that I've been focusing on in my 50 pages of notes. So I'm moving Gothic literature from the academic project category into the personal, relaxed reading category. But I do still really want a project for 2026 that gives me that sustained, lightly academic literary study. And the project that I'm going to be doing that through, I talked about this a bit in my last video about Paradise Lost, is a slow read of Paradise Lost. These are my three copies of the text that I have. Paradise Lost is comprised of 12 different books, and so in 2026, I will be reading one book per month, and I have set, not even the goal, I haven't set myself a goal because I have committed to this. I have set myself the responsibility of writing three essays each month, three essays for each of the 12 books of Paradise Lost over on Substack. It's going to be an intro to the book at the beginning of the month and a discussion and some close reading of a passage in the book at the end of the month in the free tier, and then in the middle of the month for anyone joining the paid tier, there's an additional essay that will be kind of more analytical and, you know, drawing from academic sources and a more targeted discussion of something in that month's book. So this third reading resolution, the completion of the Paradise Lost Slow Reading Book Club, is not an ambitious reading goal for me. I've read Paradise Lost a lot of times before, and even for anyone who hasn't read it before, the average weekly pacing to get through the whole book in 1 year is just 200 lines per week. It's not a huge reading load, but this is an ambitious goal for me to be setting for myself in terms of how deeply I'm going to have to be engaging with the text, because I am giving myself this responsibility of writing three essays each month. I think this resolution is the one that is going to most facilitate my goal of being consistent throughout my 2026 reading. You know, being intentional and slow, I can accomplish with really any reading habits as long as I am intentional and thoughtful and slow myself down and really engage thoughtfully with my texts. But with the Paradise Lost Book Club, I am going to be forcing myself to be consistent, not just in reading this book for a whole year, but in consistently paying attention to it, you know, keeping the same level of energy and analysis and consideration throughout the whole year, because it's not just me doing it. I have promised other people that I will be doing it. And in fact, other people have paid me to be writing these essays. And so I'm really excited for what this is going to mean for my relationship with Paradise Lost and for how it's going to affect my reading in general in the new year. I think that really, though, the most ambitious goal that I'm setting for myself is my fourth one, which I feel a little bit vulnerable sharing this last reading goal because I am afraid that I might not be able to accomplish it, but you guys won't judge me. So I will tell you, my final reading goal is to be able to read one chapter, one story in full from this book. This is a book of Italian fables by Italo Calvino. And they are written in Italian. Oh my God, Carson, I didn't know you spoke Italian. I don't. I don't. That's why this is a scary and ambitious goal, because I want to learn enough Italian in 2026 to be able to read in full one of these stories. They are short. I am assuming that because they are folk tales, they're going to be written in kind of a accessible style of language. I'm thinking that they'll probably be like one step above children's stories. Maybe not even. Maybe they are just written at the level of a children's story. That would be great. I would be delighted if I gain a children's book degree of Italian in the new year. But it's going to be hard. I don't have a natural skill for language. Right now, all I have is a 35-day streak on Duolingo and a dream. But my partner and I have taken on this challenge together of trying to learn Italian in 2026. And I was thinking that one way that I could motivate myself to do that would be through a reading goal like this one. And I love Italo Calvino in translation. If On a Winter's Night, a Traveler is one of the classics I read when I was like 17 that really blew my mind and opened up to my ideas about what literature could be. So I figured, what better way to motivate myself to read Italian than by reading the works of an author who I love in translation and could now possibly get to experience in his original language. It will be a very long time before I would be able to read If on a Winter's Night, a Traveler in the original Italian, but I am hopeful about these folk tales. So hopefully this time next year, I will be able to sit down and read one of these. So these are the resolutions I am setting for myself in the new year. As I am looking ahead to 2026, I am envisioning a year where I read in an intentional and consistent and slow way. I am setting these goals that I am going to read through like at least 60% of my physical TBR before I buy new books so that I make sure that I'm really thinking through what I put on my shelf and why. I'm going to take my love for the Gothic that I have developed over these past 4 months and continue to engage with it, but in a more relaxed way. I'm going to read Paradise Lost in community with other people. And I am going to really commit to trying to learn enough Italian to read through one full fable from this book without any translation aid. And I didn't, you know, make a reading resolution around this or foreground it in my keywords for the vibe I'm setting for my reading for the new year. But a big part of how I am thinking about how I want to move forward in my reading and a big part of how I look back over the value of this past year of reading connects to this right here. This past year on YouTube has allowed me to just have a constant source of conversation around reading in a way that is like bigger than I imagined it could be, and also is really, really fun and really constantly, I don't want to say surprising exactly. It's not surprising to me that there are so many people out there who are interested in the same things as me. It's not surprising to me that there are tens of thousands of people who want to talk about Macbeth or about Frankenstein or about 17th century women writers. It's not surprising to me that people have such interesting insights and so many things to point me towards and so many perspectives that I hadn't considered. Those things aren't surprising. What is still surprising to me and so fun and so exciting is that there are so many people who specifically want to talk about those things with me. Making videos about the things I read and talking with you all about these texts has become a really central part of the way I read. And it's really valuable for me just to sit down and articulate what I think about texts. That was true for me even when I had, you know, like 5 subscribers, that it was just a useful exercise to sit down and talk and force myself to translate my jumbled thoughts into actual sentences that hopefully would resonate with other people. And they've resonated with more and more people. And so this habit of talking through what I read and talking through my analysis and my intentions and my emotional responses to these texts and all these things, it has become part of my reading practice, and reading the things that you all say in the comments as well has become a part of the way I engage with texts. I mean, I'm constantly having people point out things to me that I had never considered before, direct me to texts I haven't heard of before. I have in my personal curriculum notes document an entire section that is just screenshots of comments that I want to make sure don't get lost in the shuffle, and I want to make sure don't get disconnected from the username so I can come back to it and remember who said what that was interesting or you know, presented me with a new idea. It really feels like a big giant discussion section, and it's so much fun for me. I need to stop. I'm going to get emotional. I've been getting kind of positively overwhelmed by this as I am thinking back over the past year and thinking forward to the new one. You know, in the past year, 40,000 people have joined the subscriber list of this channel. That's crazy to me. And over on Substack, as I've been sharing my plans for this Paradise Lost slow read and opening up the paid tier and all of that, I'm really like, it's so much more than I thought it would be, the level of interest. I thought I would start shedding followers, which I thought would be very fair because I had about 1,500 people following what had been a general sporadic literature newsletter. And then I shared that I was going to start sharing 2 to 3 essays every month about Paradise Lost. And I thought that's not going to be everybody's jam. So, you know, I'll lose a few hundred subscribers, but the ones who will stick around are the ones who are going to really be interested in Paradise Lost. And instead, it's been like, there's like 3,000 people there now who are there to read Paradise Lost and to, you know, have these discussions and to read my writing about it. And that makes me really happy. So I want to close by saying that I am really grateful for how you all engage with me here about books. You guys really take time and are really generous with your thoughts when you are responding to the videos I post here. And that is really nice for me. And I hope it's nice for you as well. And I hope that you had a great reading year in 2025 and that you will have an even better reading year and life year in 2026. And please let me know in the comments what reading resolutions you are making for yourself in 2026. And if you have a favorite book you've read in 2025, let me know what it is and I will add it to my list of books that I will buy for myself once I've worked my way through most of this stack. I will hold off until I've read through most of this stack, but then I will get to buy myself many treats. So give me recommendations for what should go on my reading list. Okay, bye.